because I always have to get the whole thing. Should healing be repeated? Should healing be repeated? This question really answers itself. Healing cannot be repeated. I love that. Healing cannot be repeated. If the patient is healed, what remains to heal him from? And if the healing is certain, as we've already said, the healing is certain, what is there to repeat? So for you, a teacher of God, to remain concerned about the result of healing is actually to limit the healing. It is now the teacher of God himself whose mind needs to be healed. And it is this, and I'm going to say you and me, should facilitate. You are now the patient, and you must so regard yourself. You've made a mistake and must be willing to change your mind about it. In other words, you lack the trust that makes forgiving truly, and so you have not received the benefit of your gift. Whenever you, a teacher of God, have tried to be a channel for healing, you have succeeded. Should you be tempted to doubt that you have succeeded, you should not repeat your previous effort. That, your previous effort, was already maximal because the Holy Spirit so accepted it, your previous effort, and so used it, your previous effort. Now you, the teacher of God, has only one course to follow. You must use your reason to tell yourself that you have given the problem to one who cannot fail, and must recognize that your own uncertainty is not love but fear, and therefore hate. Your position has thus become untenable, for you are offering hate to the one to whom you offered love. Offering hate to the one you offered love, this is impossible. Having offered love, only love can be received. It is this, that having offered love, only love can be received, that the teacher of God must trust. This is what is really meant by the statement that the one responsibility of the miracle worker, your one responsibility is to accept the atonement, which is the truth, for yourself. You, the teacher of God, you are a miracle worker because you give the gifts you received. Yet you must first accept the gifts that you have received. You need do no more, nor is there more that you could do. By accepting healing, you can give healing. If you doubt this, that by accepting healing, you can give healing, let you remember who gave the gift and who received the gift. Thus is your doubt corrected. You thought the gifts of God could be withdrawn. Thinking that the gifts of God could be withdrawn, that was a mistake, but hardly a mistake to stay with. And so the teacher of God can only recognize the mistake for what it is and let the mistake be corrected for him. You can only recognize the mistake for what it is and let the mistake be corrected for you. One of the most difficult temptations to recognize is that to doubt a healing because of the appearance of continuing symptoms is a mistake in the form of lack of trust. As such, doubting a healing because of the appearance of continuing symptoms is an attack. Usually, it seems to be just the opposite. It does appear unreasonable at first to be told that continued concern is attack. Continued concern is attack. Continued concern is attack. Continued concern, it has all the appearances of love. Yet love without trust is impossible, and doubt and trust cannot coexist. And hate must be the opposite of love, regardless of the form it takes. Doubt not the gift, and it's impossible to doubt the gift's result. This is the certainty that gives God's teachers you the power to be miracle workers. What gives you the power to be a miracle worker? You put your trust in God. The real basis for doubt about the outcome of any problem that has been given to the Holy Spirit, God's teacher, for resolution is always self-doubt. And that necessarily implies that trust has been placed in the ego, in illusory self. For only such a self can be doubted. This illusion takes many forms. Perhaps there is a fear of weakness and vulnerability. Perhaps there is a fear of failure and shame associated with a sense of inadequacy. Perhaps there is a guilty embarrassment stemming from false humility. The form of the mistake isn't important. What is important is only the recognition of a mistake as a mistake. What is important is only the recognition of a mistake as a mistake. The mistake is always some form of concern with the self, to the exclusion of the patient. The mistake is always some form of concern with yourself to the exclusion of the other person. The mistake is a failure to recognize the other person as a part of the self and thus represents a confusion in identity. Conflict about what you are has entered your mind and you have become deceived about yourself. And you are deceived about yourself because you have denied the source of your creation. If you are offering only healing, you cannot doubt. If you really want the problem solved, you cannot doubt. If you are certain what the problem is, you cannot doubt. Doubt is the result of conflicting wishes. Doubt is the result of conflicting wishes. Be sure of what you want, and doubt becomes impossible. Be sure of what you want, and doubt becomes impossible. Be sure of what you want, and doubt becomes impossible. Okay. Now I'm going to go back through it, and we're going to see if we can focus in on the instructions and some of the main, what I see as being some of the main points that are very powerful to keep in mind. Okay, so the course calls healing the undoing of fear. Most people, when they hear the word healing, they always think of like a physical healing. One of the main things to remember about the Course in Miracles is that the Course in Miracles is only concerned with perception, and the Course in Miracles works at the level of the mind. It is not trying to work at the level of the body. It's working at the level of the mind. And I think sometimes people get confused about that when they study the Course, and so they get discouraged because they think the Course is about manifesting or something. And so it says in the textbook that healing is nothing but the undoing of fear. It's the undoing of separation. And once the separation is undone, one of the effects of that can be what we would perceive as a healing in our outer experience. But it's primarily talking about a correction of perception. So it says that, you know, healing can be repeated. That if you have really been healed, what do you need to be healed again for? You know, it's like the whole idea of being healed over and over and over again. Like somebody thinks that they're healing relationships over and over and over again. Well, the relationship was never healed in the first place. Because if the relationship had been healed in the first place, there wouldn't be no need to go back and get it healed. It's like if you take your car to the shop and they fix your transmission. If they fix your transmission, why should you go back next week? Right? And then why should you go back the next week and the next week and the next week? You say, well, you never fixed my transmission in the first place. Right? So the Course is saying, number one, that whenever you remain concerned about the result of the healing, he says that you have limited the healing. So the once I give a problem to the Holy Spirit to be solved, and I doubt that the Holy Spirit in that person and the Holy Spirit in me is going to heal this situation, the Course says that I should immediately see myself as the patient. So if I think I've done the best I can and I practice the truth, then I've done all that I can do. And if I doubt that healing, then I should see myself as a patient, which means that I don't trust. I've given it up to the Holy Spirit. I've given it up to the higher self. And I don't trust that the Holy Spirit is in charge. And if I don't trust that the Holy Spirit is in charge, then I'm the one that needs healing because I'm the one that has a lack of faith. Does that make sense to everybody?
So then you never really gave it up in the first place.
Yeah, you never gave it up in the first place. Mm-hmm. The Course in Miracles, I think, is a very difficult teaching for anyone who does not want to believe in anything greater than themselves. I almost want to tell people who come in who have this thing about God or higher power that they ought to go study something else. Because it's kind of ridiculous to study a book that's all about healing our relationship with our source, and then your whole thing is that you don't even want to think about that. You don't even want to focus on that as being a reality. There are plenty of books that don't focus on God, that focus on, you know, correcting your perception. But this book is God-centered. Sorry. It really is. It's about learning how to give things up to our greater self, our real self, the Holy Spirit. So he's saying that whenever you try to be a healing channel for healing, you succeeded. And if you should doubt this, you shouldn't repeat your effort. Because if you gave it to the Holy Spirit, then the Holy Spirit has used that, and so you only have one course to follow. He says, you should let your reason tell you that you've given the problem to somebody who can't fail. So the second paragraph is saying the same thing as the first one. You must recognize that your own uncertainty is not love, but fear. So if I want to give your problem to the Holy Spirit, and I doubt it, I'm not offering you love, I'm offering fear. You already have doubt and fear. That's why you are going through the situation you're going through. Now I also have doubt and fear because I'm giving it to God and I'm not trusting that there's something that's greater than me and you that could help us handle this. So the truth is, again, I'm not offering you love, I'm just offering you fear. Now, because we are being told the way that we are going to be one day, when we correct our perception, we must be careful not to beat ourselves up because we have not reached that level of trust today. I'm going to say that again. Readiness is not mastery. Readiness is not mastery. We're here because we want to learn how to remove the blocks to love, right? Which means that we have not learned how to do it yet. So nothing that we're hearing should be about beating ourselves up. It should be about recognizing that, okay, right now I need to regard myself as the patient. What does that mean? That means that I need to accept my one responsibility. He says the one responsibility of the miracle worker is to do what? Accept the atonement for himself. And the Course says the atonement is the correction of error or the undoing of fear. So what does that mean? I only have one responsibility, to accept the truth for myself. See, that's what makes the Course in Miracles easy. You know what I'm saying? That's what makes it hard is that people want to accept the truth for everybody else. I want to fix my mama. I want to fix my child. I want to fix the people on TV. I want to fix the president. I want to fix everybody, but I don't want to fix me. I don't want to allow the truth. I don't want to allow the truth for myself. One of the most amazing things I've learned about doing the Course since 1980 is, and I wish I had realized this a lot earlier, by the way, is that the more I accept the Course for myself, the more I see all the things that I used to try to handle and everybody else become healed. It just trips me out. It's like the more I take the focus off of everybody else and put the focus on having my own perception corrected, then all those other folk, somehow or another, it starts to harmonize or it starts to heal, or at the very least, I don't lose my peace about it. So if I could tell anybody that's studying the Course and they're just really getting into it, I always want to tell them, please, just focus on you accepting as much of it as you can for yourself and just forget about everybody else. Literally. Just forget about how your boss is going to act when you get back to work. Your boss not studying the Course. Your mama not studying the Course. Your cousin not studying the Course. So to study the Course and then get mad because they don't change is kind of insane, but I see people do that. What happens is that when I study the Course, then I'm supposed to leave here and go, I give my boss to the Holy Spirit as part of myself. That's a prayer. I know that my boss will be released unless I want to use my boss to imprison myself. That's a prayer. In the name of my freedom, I choose my boss's release because I recognize that we will be released together. Now, do you know the prayer? Oh, no. Okay, then what I'm supposed to be learning is the prayer. And then I take the prayer and I apply it to my boss. Now, so what does that mean? That means that if I doubt that I've given it to the Holy Spirit, then that means I have a lack of trust. And if I have a lack of trust, then I'm the one that should be regarded as the patient, and now I should be working on my lack of trust. You follow that? Mm-hmm. Okay, because if there's a way for you to see your boss differently, then you'll be told if you are listening to the Holy Spirit within yourself. So everything about the Course is just the opposite of what we've been taught. You know, so before I go to the next paragraph, any thoughts, any sharing, any questions about that?
I have one.
Okay.
I understand that my only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself.
Okay.
How do I take it from an intellectual point of view and get it down?
Okay, the way that I try to take it from an intellectual point of view to get it down to my real self is that I try not to ever let my ego direct my actions. In other words, if I feel a temptation to attack, like in other words, if I feel a temptation to attack or I feel a temptation to doubt, then I admit that I have the doubt. I recognize that my doubt is my own call for love, and as soon as I can, I try to study. I try to meditate, but what I don't do is attack the person or the situation that I'm upset about. You know what I'm saying? It's like I finally learned through the Course how to use my own anger and upset as a cue to not do anything. Okay? It used to be in the old days, the more upset I got, the more anger I got, or the more fear I got, then that's when I try to act the most, because I feel justified. Well, you know, well, what about, that's what a lot of people are saying, well, what about if somebody, you walking down the street, and then somebody gonna pull a gun on you. It's like, when's the last time that happened? I mean, be honest with yourself. When was the last time that happened? I mean, you read about it in the paper, yes. It happens to some people, yes. But let's get real. It doesn't happen enough for that to be your example. You know what I'm saying? It's like what happens more is that your sister says something that made you mad about the what you cooked yesterday for dinner. That's really what happens most of the time. You know, I love it when people like use these really big, you know, extreme examples as if that's what they deal with. Like I tell people in here, you know, I always ask people, like, how many of you all have ever had somebody, have had 10 people beat you up in your life? But yet everybody, you see, you're the exception. But that's okay. But look at my point though. The average person has not had 10 people beat them up in their lifetime. And you shouldn't have been doing it. If that nigga pattern just happened, you need to check yourself, brother. There's something going on with you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, who's the common denominator in those 10 beatdowns?
Sound like it might be you.
I don't know. So I'm glad you're here. I want to help you. Because you're me. But the point that I'm making in saying this is that, first of all, the world has us programmed to always be defending against stuff that never happens, in most cases anyway. And if it did, you just do the best you could in that moment. That's all you're going to do. If a guy does show up like that, you're just going to do the best you can in that moment. If a person did show up with a gun, you just do the best you could in that moment based on where your level of consciousness is. And you'll get a chance to find out where it is. You know, you have a good chance to find out. But the point that I'm making, though, is that the world and the reality that we live in is more loving than it's fearful. It's more safe then it's dangerous. But we've let the media and the newspapers and all that stuff focus in on just those aspects of society that attack, to the point that now we have blown it into a fear of everybody. As if everybody is dangerous and everybody's out to get us. And I'm just simply saying that's not true. And so if I'm giving it to the Holy Spirit, then like what you were saying, if I feel it, I had a situation happen when I was at home. Because I, you know, whenever you go home and you stay, spend a week with your family, you are in the lab. Yeah, that's the level. These are the people you have very intense relationships with that go back from the very beginning, right? And I watched my ego try to take a situation and blow it up into a separation in some way, right? But I had enough experience that I've learned that when I feel that temptation to attack, the course calls that little twinge, that little guilt, that little. He said, well, okay, now when I feel that, that is my clue that I need to breathe and be quiet. See, now it used to be that was my clue to go off and do my grievance thing. Now it's like, okay, you're getting upset. That means your perception is obviously becoming distorted. And the more upset you get, the more your perception is going to be distorted. And what do you want out of this situation? And so I backed off of the situation until I could get a correct perception. And then the minute that I backed off of the situation and gave myself time enough to calm down and think about it, and then I looked at it, then I said, well, let me give me another way of looking at it. Well, okay, then when I asked for another way of looking at it, well, of course, the Course in Miracles is giving me 1,100 pages of different ways to look at it. Okay, so you can't claim you don't have another way to look. Yeah, we're a little bit slow. Like, you want another way to look at it? Okay, here you go. And one of the first things is when you take that moment to pause, your own inner self, in most cases, the truth in you will come out because you've been putting it in you and it is in you. And the truth in me said, you know, appreciate the good efforts, overlook the mistakes. It said to me, it's a call for love. It said to me, you know what? Don't take it personal. It probably doesn't have anything to do with you. Because we're so self-absorbed that we always think that whatever somebody's doing has something to do with us personally, right? And that if a person's acting a certain way, we think it's all about us. And the truth is, in most cases, it's not about us at all. But our specialness tells us that. So my point was, I knew from my feelings that I was probably going to attack, and I knew that attack impoverishes me. The Course in Miracles says attack impoverishes you. So first of all, I didn't need to be no more broke. Okay, I don't need to have no more lack in my life. And attack produces lack. That's all. That was one of the best things this book said to me. Mm-hmm. Oh, attack produces lack. Okay, well, okay. So I calmed down, and I looked at it as a call for love. I didn't let my anger guide me. See, that's practical application. I didn't let my anger guide me. I felt it. I didn't deny it, but I didn't let it guide me. Mm-hmm. And I did just the opposite of what my ego was telling me to do. That's the other thing. It's like I did just the opposite. If my ego was telling me to attack, then I chose for peace. And then I went from a peaceful place. What happened was, all this went on inside me. Notice I didn't say I said anything to the person. And when I acted from that place, the relationship instantly transformed. And not only did it transform, the person ended up giving me a wonderful gift, literally. Now, if I had to come out of attack mode, I wouldn't have experienced the gift, and I also wouldn't have experienced the peace that we experienced. In other words, nothing would have been gained by attacking. That's what I realized. So that's what I mean by the practical application. You really have to get to that point on your spiritual path that you don't let your ego direct you. You feel it, you acknowledge it, but you try not. Now, what if I had a went off? Okay, that would have been my call for love. See, that's the other way you look at it, okay? I did the best I could. You know what? I didn't pull it off that time. I'll try to do better the next time. That's really all you can do. Is just go, okay, I'll try to do it differently next time. This time I couldn't pull it off. I really did get mad. I lost my temper. I went off, but I'm learning. That's my call for love. And I'll try to do more meditation and more study and so that I'll have even more inner strength so that I won't give in to it the next time. That's all you can do, and you move on. You don't spend the next 20 years beating yourself up for losing your temper. But that's what many people do now. They punish themselves for 20 years for something that they did that only lasted a minute. If that long. You know what I'm talking about, right? You may have said something to somebody and it was really ugly, and it's 10 years later and you're still beating yourself up about it, right? Mm-hmm. See, that's just punishing yourself. That's a lack of faith. Because if you had faith, you realize that you are truly a loving being and you're in Earth School and we're here to learn how to love and you're doing the best you can and you won't always pull it off. You know? I don't know if that was helpful. But literally, that's what I do. I literally actually try to, I know it's weird, but I literally actually try to apply it. Tell nobody. I actually try to do more than read the book. I really do. And it works. I have never done it and it not worked. Not one time have I ever really applied the truth and it didn't work. There have been plenty of times that I thought about applying it and it didn't work. And I was philosophizing about it and it didn't work. And I was analyzing about should I do it and it didn't work. Or I was defending the old way. Like, in other words, if I was going, well, I know that my mother, she's just going to be that way anyway. And I'm going to say, my mama's a call for love. Okay. Well, I've already decided what she is. I have not opened my mind to another way of looking at it at all. So when she acts just like I expected her to, then that gives me justification for continuing to attack. Because guess what? That's what I really want to do. What I really want to do is attack. What I really want to do is blame. And if I want to blame, then I'm going to look for justifications for keeping my grievance. That's why I can tell when somebody walks in the room and when they really want to get past something that they got a real issue about, or when they just really want to be right and when they want to attack. Because every time you give them another way to look at it, they'll try to come up with a reason why it won't work. And when you do that to me 3 times, I'm through. Because I know you really just want to attack. You don't really want another way of looking at it. You want to attack. And if I leave you alone, you'll get the result of attacking sooner, which is that you're going to learn it doesn't work, which is going to make you change your mind faster. But if I keep interfering by trying to correct you, then I'll stall your lesson. Because if I just go on and let you keep attacking, you'll find out faster that it's not going to get you what you want. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when you rescue people, you actually keep them from ending the problem faster. Because if you go and let them crash, they'll see faster that that's not going to work. If they just go back and do the same thing over and over and over again, you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to hold a light for you, but I'm going to let you go ahead and give yourself the lesson because I tried to give you another way of looking at it. You asked me, you're defending against it, you're arguing with me, which means you want to be right more than you want to be happy. So I'm going to let you have that experience. And then you learn even faster. My brother, what were you about to add?
No, what did you say?
Was that?
Yeah, what you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Love.
I just noticed that in recently, because of the book, and understanding shame and guilt,
mm-hmm.
and letting that go, and you know, replacing that with real trust and so on. That I've been able to see people who are in that attack mode. And sometimes it directed at me, and much more easily looking at them as someone who's in pain.
Yes. Well, that's what I did. I'm glad you said that.
Instead of reacting with that first ego impulse of defending myself somehow or attacking back in some way, I'm feeling some sympathy for their situation, and I'm just trying to stay present with them so they can just keep working it out, like you're saying. And it's brought me a lot of peace. It's brought me a lot of peace whenever I can do that.
Yeah, I love how it finally dawned on me that it's easier for me to control myself than anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
It's everybody will agree with you. There's two things I always notice people agree with you. They say stuff like, "Yeah, you're right. It's easier to control yourself than anybody," but then they keep trying to control everybody else. Or they'll say stuff like, "The truth is within." Like you said, it's almost anybody saying, "That's right. You need to go within." But how many people do you know really go within? Everybody say you need to look on the inside, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you watch them, they'll still think, well, I'm going to be happy when my husband brings me flowers. Or I'll be happy when I get that raise. Or I'll be happy when I get that car. But then you say, don't you think the truth comes from within? Yes. The truth comes from within. You see it all the time. I'll be happy when I, you know. And it's like, wait a minute. Don't you see how incongruent that is?
Mm-hmm.
But the weird part is that once you give yourself peace, then the peace will turn around and create the best forms in your life for it to come to you. If you end up winning, you end up getting what you want, but you just get it in an easier way. I want to be loved. Like, you know, I like to have really loving relationships, but I had to make the decision that I couldn't decide who they were going to be. Because I used to have a habit of picking people. You ever pick somebody? You know, it's like I walk into a room and I see somebody and they met whatever my fantasies seem to be, right? That's what we all do, right? And then I go, oh, I want them. I didn't say I wanted love to come to me. I said I want you. Then I'm all about getting you to give it to me. Right. Now I'm all about getting you to give it to me now. I left out one little small detail. You know, you're about to call the police and call me a stalker. One little small detail of, you know, you're not interested. How do I know? You know, you're not interested. That's how I know. If you were interested, you jump on it. You'd be just as open to it as I was. So it took me a while to start learning how to let the idea create the form than the old way, which was focusing on the form and then trying to force the idea into the form. Now, the cool part about focusing on the idea is that I found that the idea would always come in a form that was cool too. So I didn't lose at all. You know, the form would actually be great because, I mean, how could there be a wrong form for love? Really? When you think about it, you know. So I love how people come to this class of people who are interested in the easy way. But the easy way, it's the hardest way in the world to a person that doesn't want to take responsibility and wants to hold grievances. This is the hardest class that a person wants to hold grievances could possibly come to. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, a person who don't want to take responsibility, they hate the Course in Miracles. They want to blame, they hate the Course in Miracles. I don't care what you went through in your childhood, you were stronger than it because you're here now. Let it go.
Can you say more about that? Mm-hmm. The idea comes from the form.
The idea. It's like when I go, right now, I would love to have a completely loving relationship. That's the idea. The Holy Spirit, the universe, God, all that is, right, who's in touch with all that is, right, it knows exactly who, what that would be in form, right? I don't know. I'm not in contact. I'm talking about the ultimatematch.com here. We're talking about the ultimatematch.com. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going for the content. And then I'm going to let the spirit create the body or the form it's supposed to show up in.
Mm-hmm.
Where the average person does it the opposite. They pick out the form And then they try to force the content to come through that form. That form.
Yeah.
Don't we?
Mm-hmm. That's what I think I've been struggling with.
Yeah.
Because I always look at the form and I want it to be God.
Yeah, we have. I mean, we're in form, so it makes perfect sense.
Right. And the opposite of that is when we say, well, if it's just green flowers. Yeah. He just changed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's when.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the evidence that we see.
You can make a lot of money if you set up a table outside a divorce court.
Mm-hmm.
And you just had a sign that rejection is protection.
And to tell, and when they came out, and if they came out of divorce court. And court, and they were willing to have a session with me so I can show them that they're both innocent, they're both cool, right. And they both deserve to be loved. And because they got divorced, it doesn't mean that neither one of them are not able to have a relationship. Because one of the biggest illusions going is that all relationships are supposed to last a lifetime.
That is not true.
It's very unusual to have a relationship last a lifetime. You can count the number of relationships that you have that last a lifetime on two hands, usually. One hand for most people. It's much more normal, like the course teaches, to come together, have an intense teaching learning relationship with somebody and appear to separate. That's more normal, actually. If we were talking in terms of what we see and what we experience. So the biggest problem with people that come out of divorce court is guilt. And so they need to know that they're innocent. They just did the best they could. It didn't work or went as far as it was supposed to. And that they'll have another relationship offered to them that would give them the opportunity to continue to grow. But guilt makes you want to go back and punish yourself through the same person you punished yourself through before. Because you don't love yourself. So when you don't love yourself, you always seek out those who reject you. When you don't love yourself, you always go for the person that's not really satisfying you. That's just 101. You're going to go for that. When you start to love yourself, you don't even want somebody that don't want you. You're not even attracted to them anymore. I used to always be attracted to people who were unavailable.
Yeah.
Anybody ever had that?
Yes.
Yeah. There was something about them that wasn't available. Mm-hmm. It's almost like that was the condition for my attraction.
And you didn't even know it consciously.
And it was totally unconscious. And then somebody who was really interested in me and giving me a lot of attention, I just say, well, I'll make you my friend. They immediately get relegated to the friend zone. The person that should be the lover becomes the friend. And then the person that's giving you all a hard time, that's the one you're panting for, you're passionate, you can't wait to get hold to them. And they're not fulfilling nothing. None of your needs. You know what I'm saying? Then the other person is like really nice, and then he's like, "Well, I just don't feel no. You know, I just don't get it." What is it you don't feel? Chaos, hate, anger, conflict. That's what you don't feel. That's what you turned on. But then you get into accepting your innocence, and then you find that you experience passion again. But it's the passion of peace. It's a passion that comes from peace. Because it is an in-between state when you're learning how to not be attracted to guilt, and you are learning how to be attracted to innocence. But it looks like you're not feeling it. It's just like you kind of like wonder, you don't really feel anything, And that's just a short transition. So like he was talking about here, and this is a very powerful point in that paragraph 4 when he says, one of the most difficult temptations to recognize is that to doubt a healing because of the appearance of continuing symptoms is a mistake in the form of lack of trust, and that continued concern is attack. That blew me away the first time I read that. In other words, if you have the flu and you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you a shot, right? Your flu does not disappear as soon as he gives you the shot. You've actually received the healing, right? But the symptoms continue to appear, but you know you've had the healing.
Like with finances.
Yeah, it's anything. It's like what? So the course is saying the once that you start to practice the truth, then even though at first it may seem as though the same situations are still existing, don't doubt the healing because of the appearance of the upset or whatever you're still seeming to be there. For instance, if everybody in this room right now are trying to accept the idea that they're innocent, that they're spiritual, that they're loved, that they're joined, and that they're taking responsibility for their experience. Mm-hmm. Okay, can we say that most of y'all are trying to do that best you can?
Yep.
Okay. Then don't doubt that you are healing just because you still see some of the appearances of the old way you used to be.
That's That's the form.
See, it's like if you, because if you're doing this, then you have changed and you are practicing the truth and you're going to get the results of that. But just like when you take the shot, you don't immediately lose the sore throat. When you take the truth, you may still have some insanity hanging around you for a while, and you still might go off, and you still may get mad, and you still, you see what I'm saying? But don't doubt the healing because of the continuing symptoms. He says, because if you do that, that you're not trusting. You're not trusting the truth. You're not trusting yourself. You're not trusting God. And then it says, continued concern is attack. It looks like it's love, but if I'm always concerned about you, I'm just projecting fear on you. I'm not projecting love on you if I'm constantly concerned. As soon as you walk out the door, I'm worried about something happening to you. I'm surrounding you with fear thought. I'm not surrounding you with love. I'm surrounding you with fear. And parents have to really watch it, because parents really get caught up in that. I worry all the time about my child. I worry all the time about my child. Well, you're just sending fear out to your child all the time. You know, surround your child with peace. Surround your child with peace. I let peace extend from me to my child right now. Let love extend from me to my child right now. But you can't protect your children anyway. That's an illusion. You can't be with them all the time, everywhere they go. So it's kind of ridiculous to think you're able to do that anyway. But Spirit is with them everywhere they go. God is with them everywhere they go. The universe is with them everywhere they go. That's what you want to tap. That's the ultimate babysitter. You know? It's the Spirit. So,
I was just going to say that right now in my life, the message continues to be every day to accept that I don't have control over anything but myself.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that really is the bottom line for everything else in course to fall into place. You know what I mean? Is to just know that I'm not in control, Spirit's in control, and then everything else kind of...
Yeah, and you know what the learning process is? The learning process is for you to do everything you can to let go of anything that keeps you from realizing that. That's the learning process. It's the undoing of all the thoughts and feelings that you have that would keep you from recognizing that you really are the one that's in touch with Spirit. And it really is your relationship with Spirit that would protect you and not anything else. Everything else is just a way for Spirit to take care of you. It's like, don't confuse the source with the means. It's like somebody who thinks their job is taking care of them, but the job is nothing but the means for Spirit to take care of them. That Spirit is the source, not the boss. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, if you were to do that one thing, the transformation that you would start seeing this year would be phenomenal, you know, and that you were probably already seeing.
Absolutely.
You're probably already seeing big progress.
Yeah, and it's a load off. Like, oh, I don't have to be responsible for you. Like, I just can be the co-creator with God of my existence, and the rest is outside of myself, is taken care of.
It will. And if there's something for you to do, you will be told. That's the other part. Like, if it is something for you to do with another person, you'll be told what it is, and it won't feel like a sacrifice.
Right.
It'll be something that you'll be grateful to do. You'd be glad to do it, you know. It's hard to get the love as a sacrifice. That's such a big programming that we have, is that when you love somebody, you sacrifice, 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 sacrifice. But when you love somebody, you share, you share, you share, you share. That's different from sacrificing, you know. Sacrificing means I think I'm losing every time I do something for you. I think I'm lessened every time I do something for you. I'm making
you
a sacrifice.
Appreciate.
Yeah, you and you and it breeds so much resentment. It breeds so much resentment. You know. So if you're a person that wants people to sacrifice for you, you ain't exactly getting off on what I'm saying right now. You know, if you want people to sacrifice, then you know it's not going to be too thrilling. All right. Anybody else before I hit the last couple of more points about this section?
I've been finding that if I admit that I'm doing some of these things, like the anger or the grievances, that I admit that I like it, I kind of find release. It sounds weird.
Yeah, you can't own something and then keep the charge on it. You know, sometimes I just want to be mad.
Yeah.
And I just go, you know, I just want to be mad right now. You know, I want to be mad, right? And then when I, but you know the problem with that, the minute I make it okay, I can't stay mad.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you make it okay, it's like it dissipates pretty soon. Mm-hmm. But if you go, I'm mad and I shouldn't be mad. I'm a Course in Miracles student, so I shouldn't be mad. I should be smiling all the time, and I should be happy about everything, no matter what happens. And, you know, then it just lasts forever, and you go crazy. You know, don't try to be nice. Okay. Some of y'all got that down pat too, don't you? Right? Don't try to be nice. Be yourself. Who yourself is loving. But nice people are the ones that end up on top of churches shooting people with rifles. Because they repress everything. They don't ever admit to what's really going on inside of them because they're trying to be nice. It'd be better to just be honest. Wouldn't it? Right now, I'm going to tell you, you just need to kind of back off. I'm not seeing things correctly. You know, right now I feel separate. Just give me a minute. And I'll come back. And I'm not going to pretend I feel good. I don't feel good today. I don't feel good. You know. So, I want to be around people I can be honest with. You know. Then the next paragraph, he says, this is really powerful. He says, the real basis for doubt about the outcome of any problem that's been given to the Holy Spirit for resolution is always doubt, self-doubt. So he says the real basis for doubt is self-doubt. So if you have doubt, is this really doubt in a self you have made up? Because he calls that the illusory self. Did you follow that? Mm-hmm. It's like when I say stuff like, you should give it to the Holy Spirit and you should trust that the Holy Spirit is going to do the best in the situation, and the person doesn't feel they don't want to do that, it's because they're afraid. It's because they can't figure out how to handle it on their own. Most fear comes from people not knowing how to handle it on their own. So when you say, you know, when you talk about a relationship and they have doubt that they can have peace in that relationship, what they're saying is, I don't have faith in my ability to handle this situation or to have this situation. I don't know how I'm going to do this. So really, really doubt is self-doubt. Then he goes on to say that what you're really doing is placing your trust in your ego, which is the illusory self. And then he tells you what self-doubt is, or putting trust in your ego is. He says, now you can tell when you're trusting in your ego when you have a fear of weakness and a fear of vulnerability, or when you have a fear of failure, or when you feel ashamed because you think you're inadequate. Mm-hmm. Or if you say, oh, I couldn't be as loving as you say I am. You know, it's false humility. Oh, mm-hmm. I just couldn't be this nice a person. He says, it's a mistake. It's just a mistake. Every time you put faith in your ego, you've just made a mistake. Every time you put faith in the part of you that doubts God, doubts love, mm-hmm. doubts truth, he said, that's a mistake. So, if I try to figure out how I'm going to get my ego to impress your ego or to change you, then I'm placing my faith in my illusory self. Mm-hmm. I'm not placing faith in my real self or your real self. Children have the Holy Spirit inside of them. Teenagers even. I know that some parents would really doubt that, but they do. You can communicate to a person from spirit to spirit and accomplish sometimes more with that person than you'll ever be able to accomplish with them talking face to face, your ego to their ego. You ought to try it sometimes. Sometimes some people that you're having a challenge with, go to a quiet place somewhere, think about them, and then start communicating to them as if they were right in front of you, talking to their real self. And you'd be amazed at sometimes the results you'll get out of that. Because you're bypassing their ego. You're bypassing the part of them that might want to clash with you. And really, you're not trusting your ego anymore. You're really trusting the truth in both of you, the spirit in both of you. And the last paragraph says, the mistake is always some form of your concern with yourself, to the exclusion of the other person. So, if I'm having a problem with another person, do you know what it's saying, the real problem I'm having with that person? The problem that I'm having with that person is I am not looking at that person as a part of me. I'm looking at that person as somebody else that I need to influence. That's the mistake. How many times when you're upset with somebody, do you talk to them from the perspective that they're you? Usually it's just the opposite. It's usually the madder you are, the more you think they aren't you. So that's the mistake. It's a big difference between communicating with somebody from the perspective that you want to be joined with them than communicating with somebody from the perspective that there's somebody else that you're trying to get to do what you want them to do. That's the mistake.
It seems like that's difficult, though, because, like, I know I've experienced where I've been like, how are you capable of doing that? I'm really, truly don't know how I couldn't behave the way you just behaved. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
So that really, for me, is a block to seeing union with certain.
Absolutely. That's called projection. That's the block with us connecting with anybody. It's just what you just said. That's what all of us do. You know, it's like, because we're thinking of the form of what they're doing instead of the content of what they're doing. Okay? In other words, you might say, well, I've never stabbed anybody with a knife, so I don't see how you could have stabbed somebody with a knife, but have you ever been angry?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Or attacked in any other way. Of course you have. You may not have done it in that form, but you've had feelings of separation too. You see what I mean? That's how you're the same. Not in terms of maybe you doing the same physical thing that they did, but you're the same because you certainly have had the same attitude that they have. The same content. You've had times where you were afraid. You've had times that you've been mad. You've had times that you've attacked. That's all you've seen from them. They're doing the exact same thing. They're just doing it in a different appearance. But that's all. But the appearance is the illusion. So if I was to go, you know, this person right here, I'm going to give you to the Holy Spirit as part of myself. I'm going to try to choose for as much peace as I can in this particular moment. And how should I behave? Can I tell you how to behave? No, I can't tell you how to behave, because the way you would behave would change from situation to situation depending on the circumstance. That's why I never try to tell people in the class how to behave. Like people say, well, somebody came at me with a knife, what should I do? Mm-hmm. I can't tell you what you should do if someone came at you with a knife, but I could share with you what you should think.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? It's like I can tell you the attitude that'll be, you know, that he's telling us right now, the attitude to have. But what you're going to do, you're going to do whatever you do.
Right.
In that situation, you might run, you might grab him, you might, you know what I'm saying? I've seen people be in situations where they were being physically threatened, and in their mind, they ran every Course in Miracles prayer that they knew, because it was so ingrained in them from their study. I had it happen to my brother, as a matter of fact, and who was also a truth student. And a guy was going to hijack his car. And he just been in the truth so long that he immediately went into, you know, let peace stand in my mind and yours, you part of me, da 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 da, because he had been programmed that way. And the guy ended up saying, not only not hijacking the car, but warning him about, you know, picking people up or letting people get that close to the car, and got out the car. And this is a true story. You know what I'm saying? But most people, they're not grounded enough in the truth that when a situation comes up, they go to the truth, because they only practice the truth when they come to classes or when they're having lunch. So it never really becomes a part of their being. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? But if you make it a part of your being, then you reprogram yourself, and then when you need it, everything you've studied will come up. You know, and that's what happened with him. So, because at some point you will lose your fear of death anyway. And when you lose your fear of death, you probably will never be attacked, which is interesting.
Mm.
That's really interesting, you know, because there's no fear. If there's no fear, you're not going to attract it to you. It's the fear that attracts the attack. To begin with, that's why to put yourself around people that you feel peaceful with, and you feel loved by, and you feel appreciated by, that's the most protective thing that you could do for yourself, because you're building up a consciousness of safety, and you're building up a consciousness of being loved, and that consciousness will protect you. But when you're around people all the time that you conflict with, you don't enjoy, you attack each other, it's in a sense you're lowering your defenses. You're making yourself more vulnerable. You're not increasing the idea that you're loved. You're not increasing the idea that you're saved. So those people who acknowledge you, love you, appreciate you, they are angels. They are helping you in ways you will never realize. But if you're around all these people who are always judging you, criticizing you, condemning you, telling you what's wrong with you, and you're not enough, and those are the people that you hang out with, and then the people who acknowledge you, you don't ever have time for, which is the way the average person does it. They spend all their time with the conflict people. And the people that they like, they don't have time for. You ever noticed that? The people that you really get along with the most, how little time sometimes you spend with those people? That they're not the ones that you go, hey, let me call you up on the phone, let's go out tonight. It'll be the person that you're having the conflict with so y'all can get together and process something. We got to get together and we got to work it out. We got to work out something. And as soon as I get to working it out with you, and I got this other person I need to go work it out with. And then when I get to working it out with all these people, I'm going to finally have peace. That's what the wrong mind tells you. It's just the opposite. Let me focus on as many of the people in my life as possible who are grateful to me, and I'm grateful for them, and they appreciate me, and I'll be so full of love that when I'm in the presence of the people that are in conflict with me, they won't affect me at all. I'll be so sure I'm loved that there's nothing they can do to upset me. And so then we'll be able to work it out because, hey, I'm peaceful anyway. I mean, what are you trying to work it out for? So that y'all can have peace? Well, suppose you're already at peace. Well, then you've already won. Right? I mean, the point of me working it out with you is so I can experience peace. If I already got peace, then what difference does it make whether you keep your grievance or you stay upset with me or whatever you're doing with me? I'm okay. But if my peace depends on you saying you forgive me, now I've given all my power to you, and I'm messed up now. Because if you don't have consciousness, you're going to withhold your forgiveness from me to punish me. And then here I am, depending on your forgiveness to feel good about myself. Are you priding yourself and holding a grievance against me? Don't you see the problem I put myself into? That's what happens all the time. You know, we'll say, until you say it's okay, I'm okay, then I'm not okay. But then you don't even want me to think I'm okay. Because you're mad at me. So I'm doomed. But if I go, I'm okay, let's see if we can be okay together. You go, well, I don't want to be okay. Well, I'll just be okay till you're ready to be okay. And in the meantime, I'll be okay. Does that make sense? I was asking you because to me this stuff makes sense to me. So while you're mad, at home, not going out, not meeting people because you're so full of grievances and by yourself, which isn't a very attractive energy to attract people anyway, right? I'll be still extending peace in my experience, still experiencing love, but guess what? When you're ready to join me in peace, guess what? I'll be right here for you. I tell people that all the time. You change your mind and you want to be friends again and you want to connect with me, especially after I tried. If I say, you know, hey, you know, we're feeling separate. Can we get past this? I really would like for us to be connected. You know, okay, all right. Let me tell you what. You okay with me? I might not be okay with you, but you okay with me. I no longer have a thing with you. Okay. Now, when you're ready to be okay with me and be sane with me, I'll welcome you back with open arms. But in the meantime, I'm finna go down here and do a little hip-hop dancing tonight. You know what I'm saying? I'm finna go play a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Because guess who you're attacking with all that anger, guilt, and grievances? You. Who do you think you're impoverishing and making sick? You. Guess what? I don't feel your anger. I can feel your love, but I can't feel your anger. I can empathize with your anger. And then say, I feel your anger. But I'm not really feeling your anger. I'm remembering what anger feels like. And now I'm saying, I feel your anger. You know what I mean? You know, love is the only thing the Course says. Love is the only thing that you can share. You can't really share the rest of the stuff. But you can empathize with it and you can imagine what it feels like. Because we've all felt it before. I think that's a good deal. I'm glad of that. I'm glad I don't feel other people's stomach aches. Don't you? Could you imagine how that would be if you felt everybody else's pain? You wouldn't get anything done. You wouldn't be able to help anybody. It's great that we don't because it puts us in the position to be helpful. If I'm not suffering, I can help you. But if I'm suffering with you, I'm no good to you. But most people consider suffering together being empathy. So if you feel bad and I feel bad with you, then now I'm your friend. Now both of us feel lousy. Now I'm your friend because I feel bad with you. No, I'm compassionate about what you're going through. I'm going to still maintain my peace so I can be there for you, so I can hold a space for you of love. So that's what he's saying here. He says that all we have to do is realize that whenever we think we're dealing with anybody else other than a part of ourselves, we're deceived. And he says, whenever you are in doubt, it's because you're in conflict about what you want. That you can't be sure of what you want and be in doubt. So if I really want a healing between us, then I'm not in doubt about us. I know what I want between us. So he says, be sure of what you want, and doubt will be impossible if you're sure of what you want. So I pose this question to everybody today, going into 2007. You know, what do you want? Mm-hmm. People set all these goals at the beginning of the year. But I think that's great, really, to ask yourself as you lead out today, you know, what do you really want? What do you really want? I'm so glad I finally know. I used to say, I don't know. Now I know.
Can I say that Jessica and I were talking last night, and that's the way to relinquish judgment?
Is what?
Focus on what you want.
Exactly, because if you focus on what you want, then there's no need to judge. Because that's already been taken care of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I walk into a room, if I can be sure of what I want, then I know what I should do in every situation. When I wanted peace, that was my brother, was the person I was talking about earlier. And I was like, if I want peace with my brother, then if I really want peace with my brother, then I immediately get out, then I know what to do. It's like the minute I decided I wanted to have peace with my brother, mm-hmm. then I knew how to treat my brother. Mm-hmm. But when I wasn't sure, when I wanted to go, you know, it's like then I had conflicting wishes. I wanted to have some peace and I wanted to fight, right? So then there's the fear and the conflict. But the minute I went, well, in fact, the Course says, whenever you're in a situation and you're trying to figure out what to do, he says, this is what you do and you'll always know what to do. He says, ask yourself, what do I want? And then he says, then give that. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, I have to go, what do you want, Earl? What do you want? I said, well, I want peace. Then, okay, well, if you want peace, then you know attacking your brother is not going to give you that peace. You know, trying to fix him, you know that's your brother. He's always been your brother. You can count on him being your brother. You know your brother. What is he being? He being your brother. That's where your brother is. You know what I'm saying? So what do you want? Then I went, okay. So then I came in with an attitude of I want love. So I said, okay, well, give him love. So I went, okay, let me go and give my brother some love. What did my brother do? Immediately responded. Because he knew at a soul level that I was sincere. Because mm-hmm. people can tell when you're just going through the motions. But then that's a good practice. You know, but if he had not responded, I still would have increased love in my life. I still would have won in the way it went. Because I gave what I wanted to receive. You can't lose from doing that. So you all present me with an opportunity to practice on the easiest people in the world to practice with. Because I have no grievances with you. I have no scripts for you. So I get a chance to practice and get programmed in this new thought with you. And then when I'm around other people that could be more of a challenge, this programming comes back. That's why we're so blessed to have each other, because we get a chance with each other to focus on these ideas and make these ideas stronger. That's the gift that we give each other. So Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. What's going on? I heard you the mama of the house right here. Thanks. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm telling you. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. I'm telling you, thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Love Altar. I got a feeling that this is going to be an incredible year. 007.
opposite.
It's going to be, you know, I'm going to heaven in 2007. You know, I think we got a great opportunity to make this year be about the application mm-hmm. of the ideas. Mm-hmm. And I really want to connect with those people in the class that really want to put the focus on application this year, you know, so that we can get the result faster and have a good time. So tomorrow night, we're going to do it. We'll have our Thursday class at 7, and then Sunday.
Perception of the ice and the snow.
Yes. Yes, what I'm saying. The Course says you shouldn't ask for the physical healing. You should ask for the correct perception of it. Like instead of saying, you know, I want my body to be healed of something, you would say, I want the correct perception of my body. Mm-hmm. Or if you got a financial problem, you would say, I want the correct perception of money. You know, I want the correct perception of it. Because it's only our perception. He says that's the problem. It's the way we're looking at it. So I'm asking for a correct perception of myself this year. You know? Mm-hmm. And I want to give you a correct perception of yourself. So I'm going to be rooting for your innocence. Okay? I'm your innocent. Mm-hmm. I'm the one that will see your innocence. Okay? So if you're feeling guilty and you need somebody to see your innocence, then I'm willing. Okay? That don't mean you don't make mistakes and I don't make mistakes. And the mistakes aren't for correction. But who you are, that's innocent. That's what you are. Okay? Hugs are available. I love you.
Love you, yeah.
And I will see you soon, I hope. I'm going to have some fun.
I already see it. I already see my phone. I'm looking at it right now.